Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there, and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman, and you should leave that part of the recording, Kevin, where your dog barked, just to let everyone know we are over Zoom again. Hello.
He's outside. I thought I was safe. I'm not. It's fine.
I like this because I'm at my PC setup that I got about 6 months ago, so I'm not at the table I used to be at with my laptop during pandemic times when we were super sad and talking about basketball to distract us, so I don't get the flashbacks that you probably have right now, which is a bummer for you, not a bummer for me. Hey, will Twitter be a thing next time we record? What do you think? Will it be functioning? I think that's the better question.
I think it's going to be in bad shape, but still exist in a week.
Okay. We should talk about this because if you are not on Twitter, you will not care about this at all. So anyway, Twitter is in a rough spot right now. There's been like severe cuts within their ranks, and essentially the people who are in charge of making sure everything works and the code is right and the wires are where they're supposed to be and all that mumbo jumbo, they're gone for the most part. And it just seems like the site is going to, with their employees telling reporters that, yeah, like I wouldn't be surprised if the site crashes at any moment now because of the staffing that they have left, which is, you know, it's Twitter and everyone has their opinions on how great of a tool it is or how much of a cesspool it is, whatever. But I left when Danny Shapiro left, who is the version of you on the news side, I asked him, I was like, so should we just like read the wires like 15 years ago if Twitter goes down? Because we do use it as our main source of breaking news and all that kind of stuff. And of course, this is where most people connect with us too specifically. So now everyone last night was frantically plugging their Instagrams and stuff. Yeah. Just in case the thing got nuked, which is why I wanted to bring it up and just say, if that does happen, we'll talk about it on the podcast, where we're at and kind of where everything is at and go from there. My opinion on the matter is that Twitter itself, I don't think is going to cease to exist. Now, will there be some short-term issues and maybe just like short-term outages where the site just isn't operable for a couple of weeks or something? I'm not ruling that out. I'm waiting until Sunday when the World Cup starts to see if it gets through the first couple of days of the World Cup. I think we're good,
yeah. But
that's just for now. And we'll see. And then obviously we'll talk about alternatives and stuff, because I think something for people to realize is that some version of this is going to exist, because we just live in a world now where this type of news and getting news from something like this is a thing that is not going to cease to exist. Because I think you messaged me, right? And you're like, do I have to turn on like ESPN alerts for Woj right now in case Twitter breaks and we don't have Twitter notifications anymore? And I was like, yeah, probably. Yeah. So this is my long-winded way for both of us of kind of saying, just state the podcast is not going anywhere. It's not on Twitter. We promote it on Twitter, but we'll update you guys here for those asking, because a lot of people actually were asking me last night.
Because of our job description, I've just been going through and I'm like, all right, what's Mastodon? I'll download this. Sure. Jack Dorsey's site, I'm going to sign up for that. My TikTok exists.
Whoa, you went there. I'm not going there.
Yeah, I'm just trying to be a prepared guy. But yeah, I think Twitter will. Do you remember? I don't even remember that we've had so many like Mars rovers, but I think when like I was in college, there was one Mars rover, and they're like, oh yeah, this thing's going to last like a month. And then it lasted 9 years, and like everyone made it was even surprised. And they're like, man, we must've done a good job, man. Like maybe they made Twitter so good that like even no one being able to operate it, it just lasts for a while. Worst case. So we'll see.
All the reports started coming in Thursday night, and everyone was basically treating it like it was the end in case it was the end, because it's one of those situations right now where I don't think we're going to get a 12-hour warning. If it's going to stop working, it's just going to stop working at some point if that's what happens. So yeah. Everyone was being either really sentimental or being like, screw this place sucks anyway, this is good. But the people who lost their jobs still, that sucks, but this place sucks and it's the worst. And all that kind of fun stuff was happening last night. And then I woke up and saw that I had 3 Twitter notifications. I was like, all right, didn't break while I was sleeping. We're still chugging. And we'll see if we are next week and the week after that. Speaking of week-to-week check-ins, Kevin, we've been ending the podcast each week by saying if we think Jay Crowder is going to get traded. If you guys haven't caught on to one of our many bits, Kevin, don't we have so many bits on the the program?
Yeah, we have bits.
We have bits. That's one of them. We'll continue the bit, of course, at the end of the podcast. We'll save that for the end. But I was thinking about this as I clicked record of what to call this, because news quotation marks, I guess rumblings became like, now it's like a meme, because I believe it was Mark Stein originally from the New York Times who said that he's heard credible rumblings or something exactly. I can't remember how he phrased it, that the movement, there's been movement on the Jay Crowder front on the trade market. Then Jake Fisher reports that it appears to be a 3-team deal that is close. Again, every longtime listeners of the podcast know how much I love verbiage in these reporting situations. It appeared to be close. So that happened before the Warriors game during the Warriors game, I want to say, on Wednesday. So then it was like, okay, are we going to wake up to a Jay Crowder trade? No, nothing like that at all. And then Shams Charania, I think, Kevin, what people kind of need to understand for those guys like Shams and Woj is when they hear something about this and they're not actively reporting on it, I'm sure Shams went around and reported on this as much as he could over 36 hours or whatever. And what he came back with on Friday morning was that the Suns have interest in John Collins, Harrison Barnes, Kyle Kuzma, KJ Martin. Not a video form, Kevin. Jeremy's not here recording us. That would be weird if he was doing it at our respective houses at the same time.
Through our computers, yeah.
Air quotes on interest. And you can kind of talk us through it here because you wrote the story on our site. Gambo added clarification later that you can get into, but I don't know how much of news this is. What do you think? Run us through it.
Okay, so basically Sham said regarding John Collins, the Suns have shown desire, which, different word there. But then he said that they don't like his contract, which I believe is, including this year, 5 years, $125 million, if I'm correct. Basically to say, like, to me, when he writes that, he's not wrong. He talked to someone on another end, maybe Atlanta, maybe John Collins' agent. And that, all that says to me is the Suns don't hate the guy, but they don't like his contract, which basically is like they're not trading for him, right? And then Gambo came out and says there's no way that like they're not trading for him based on what I checked in on. So, yeah, like a lot of this stuff. And Gambo said the Harrison Barnes link was old news, basically, from the summer. So, like, when people report all this stuff, it's coming from one place, right? And like Jake Fisher and Mark Stein very well could have heard maybe from Atlanta's end again, like, oh, we think it was going to be close. We thought Phoenix was reciprocating phone calls or whatever. And then they just like something fell through, right? So.
And we don't even, to clarify, we don't even know the two other teams that Jake Fisher was reporting on.
Yeah.
So that's a whole other element too.
Jake Fisher in his pod this morning, or his stream, I guess it was last night, but he put it out there this morning that he did say, like, all I'll say about this is everyone thinks, basically, again, not even Milwaukee or Phoenix, but everyone thinks Milwaukee is like the leader in the clubhouse for getting Crowder right now. And that's, I think that's only because everyone thinks Grayson Allen is going to be traded from Milwaukee. So they're assuming that there's some third team with those two guys involved, I guess. And so all this is to say, I think everyone is guessing and everyone's reporting on sources that are like the third party in this or something.
That's a really good way to frame it. So it's basically that if you want to buy into this reporting, and I'm going to phrase it as that, if you want to just read into this as much as you want to, which as you guys know, I don't as much, but a lot of people listening do, I like the framework of that, that basically Grayson Allen is going to be traded, or sorry, Jay Crowder is going to be traded to Milwaukee. Grayson Allen is going to be traded to a third team, and that third team is going to give the Suns what they give up for Jay Crowder, essentially, or what they get in return for Jay Crowder, basically. Yeah. And that's where you went to like Houston and you were like, okay, is this Eric Gordon? Is it is KJ Martin in there somewhere? And that's where speculation kind of began on that front. And then when I was on Burns and Gambo yesterday and Gambo reported that, repeated this reporting, there are the words, on the air that the Suns aren't interested in Eric Gordon. They don't have any interest in Eric Gordon at this time. Very interesting thing that he said, Kevin. He said that they're not interested in trading for him, but the buyout market is another story. And that's where their TPM MLE comes into consideration. If you're not familiar, you can use the taxpayer mid-level exception in the buyout market in that time. It doesn't just go away when the season starts or whatever. So if Eric Gordon gets released by, or bought out, sorry, by the Rockets after the trade deadline, when they don't get a first round pick for him, like they've been trying to get for it, what feels like decades at this point, the Suns can swoop in and say, here's the maximum. Now, would the Suns give him that money after they don't want to trade a pick for him? I don't know, but that made sense. That reporting from Gambo made a lot of sense to me, Kevin, because they would have Eric Gordon last year if they wanted Eric Gordon. You know what I mean? They would have ponied up the pick if they liked him.
And also the taxpayer mid-level, like in the middle of the year when it, like even the middle rung teams won't have that kind of money to throw around generally. So that's actually like, if you are fighting with other contenders, you actually have a pretty good advantage there if you want to spend all of that. So that is an interesting wrinkle and a good point.
Something that I tweeted about today, I kind of just gave my two cents on the whole thing. And I don't think, and this is, again, not looking from my viewpoint, because we talked about Harrison Barnes, Kyle Kuzma, not John Collins as much, but I wrote about those two guys, blurbed them a little bit in some offseason stuff. And basically, from the viewpoint of what we know about the Suns, it just wouldn't make sense if they traded for a starting power forward right now, unless it was the Kevin Durant tier, a little bit below that tier, an all-NBA caliber type of player. And that's because why would you go through all of this J Cam stuff to start Cam, see Cam play super duper well in those 8 games, and then again go back to the 16 games last year. So now you've got 24 games of data on hand that suggest he's pretty darn good as a starter, and then more specifically with Bridges, with Booker, with Paul, with Aiden, and in more long term minutes and more serious minutes. Why would you go through all of that, see all of that, and then just kind of change your mind? And what a lot of people tweeted at me was that, and apparently this is news to me today, and this is why it's always, believe it or not, like one of the replies to my tweet was Cam has a torn meniscus, which, oh my God, wow, breaking news. Thank you so much for your sound investment and spending 7 seconds to type that and send it to me. You really helped me out there. I got a lot of replies, and I didn't know I was going to get this kind of thought that Cam is in. There's a notion from some of the fan base, I don't know how much, but a lot of people replied to me and were just like, Cam's injury prone, trade for someone now. If they play really well over the next 6 weeks, start them. If they don't, sit them, have them come off the bench and put Cam back in the starting lineup, and then they're there in case Cam gets hurt again. We'll get into that part of it in a minute and how much we buy into the notion that he's injury prone, because we haven't really talked about it at all, which kind of spoils what we think about it. But to that point and what I sort of talked about, it doesn't make sense for John Collins or Harrison Barnes to come here and then for Cam to go back to the bench to go through all of this now. Now, 4 months ago, it made sense because you hadn't gone through this whole charade yet. And I think that they would have been much more serious and shown much more urgency, like I thought they would and they should in the summer. I thought they would have had that 4 months ago if they were really looking at that type of upgrade on the team. And they did not get anything done. So here we are. And what changes essentially from now is the Cam injury. And then, of course, the notion that I talked about earlier. But then I'll one last thing, and the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because basically what Gambo was reporting again today on Friday on his show is that the Suns aren't looking for a guard. They're not looking for a center. They're looking for a wing. And then he said like a fourth wing specifically. I don't know if that's exactly what it is, because I doubt that they're going to look at someone and be like, ah, he's too good. Like, he would be too good of a player on the bench. And you've got to find someone who makes sense off the bench, which is why if Kyle Kuzma comes here and thinks he's going to start, then he shouldn't come here. He needs to come here knowing that he's going to come off the bench. If KJ Martin comes here and thinks he's going to start, he can't come here. He needs to know that he's coming off of the bench. So that's the type of thing where you look at the upgrades and like the fits around and the trades that are possible, and where it makes more sense by the hour why we are where we are in terms of waiting.
Yeah. I mean, even if you just look at the Collins thing, which is a wonky fit from a basketball perspective and a money perspective, because you're allocating so much money to five starters then down the road. Like, if I got John Collins, I would want him to come off the bench, but I'm sure he doesn't want that. And I think the adding Kuzma off the bench is a good example where that makes a lot of sense, where you need that scoring punch. You kind of help the Booker-led or the CP-only units if this team was fully healthy. And that adds a little more, nudges one knob into the helping Chris Paul get to the end of the season stuff. I will say, I think I'm more in the... Yeah, it matters that Cam Johnson's injury prone, but I think that's more about his contract. I think if you're the Suns, you can say, well, we don't want to pay you that much because you're injury prone, and other teams are going to do the same, and then they might get a good deal at the end of the year despite the rising salary cap expectations. So I think that's going to matter there, but I don't think it matters this year. Like, I don't think you're going to bring in John Collins or Kuzma and say, go to back to the bench, Cam Johnson, because you can't handle big minutes. No, like, you got to ride this out because that lineup makes a lot of sense. And the whole point of any upgrade, whether it's guard or wing, I think, is you need to kind of bolster the bench unit and give your secondary kind of score playmaker value as a team, just up that a bit to help Booker out and stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I think the Cam Johnson injury prone things, like, definitely true if you're talking about long-term contracts. But I think as far as what they're focused on right now, it's helping this team maybe contend for a championship this year and maybe next a lot more. And right now it's just hard to see where that is going to come from.
The interesting thing about this, Kevin, is that people replying to me about this, I don't think even know about the surgeries from college. I think they're just talking about his NBA career. Because if you don't know, Cam had serious hip problems. I could not recommend enough. I'm blanking on the name of it right now, but he did a podcast with Theo Pinson, both North Carolina guys, and Mikal Bridges was on it too on his own separate episode. Both of them are great, but Cam went into detail about his whole journey. It includes stuff on his injuries and his hips. And that was something that we talked about on this podcast, I think 2 years ago, I want to say, where he really opened up and just talked about how he's still seeing progress in terms of his hips right now. But he's had, this will be now the third time in 4 years where he's had something that has come up that has forced him to miss 10 or more games. He had a quad injury in his rookie year. And then or 2 years ago, I should say, he had he didn't really have a stretch where he missed a ton of time necessarily, but then he had the ankle, I believe it was last year, I want to say. No, that was the quad. I'm sorry, that was the quad. So it's one of those things where I'm not sure I buy it. I'm not sure I buy it. Now it does, to your point, in terms of the way you operate with roster construction, I don't think it should factor into that. But with his contract, I think it should.
Yeah,
it kind of has to, because he already had this history coming in, a lengthy history, which did not keep him out of the lottery. So that speaks to how confident the Suns were with what they got back in terms of the medical reports and where he was at. And then obviously the player that he's come has become, and how the hip hasn't really been an issue for him. It kind of popped up here and there on the injury report in his first 2 years. But the last two, we haven't really seen it on there at all. So I think that speaks to some progress there. But these other injuries kind of come up. That's where it does come up in contract negotiations. What was Shams's reporting? That it was 466 is what the Suns were offering?
Yeah. And so it was 466 was their final offer, I guess. And I don't even remember where we read the 72, 4 for 72 was kind of the like upper end. And he probably wanted more, which again is fair. Like it's fair for him to ask more than even Mikal is making right now, just because of what the future is going to look like and how a year's difference really kind of is changing how the market is. So I think, like, it's all fair. And at the end of the day, you don't need to go searching for John Collins to replace Cam Johnson unless Cam Johnson, after failed negotiations, was like, I'm going to pull a Jay Crowder next offseason. I don't think he's going to do that just based on what we've heard and how he is with this team.
I completely agree. He should have said 80 is the minimum. 4 for 80 is the minimum. That's what he should have said, because with what you're saying and the year difference alone, 4 for 90 for Mikal isn't even comparable. What did DeAndre freaking Hunter get again? Do you remember that number specifically?
Did he get 90? I think he got 90.
I want to say he got 95. He got 4 for 95.
Yeah.
So Cam, who I think there's an argument is a better player than DeAndre Hunter right now, should have said 80 at the minimum. And he probably wanted more than that, because that's usually how these things work. And boy, Kevin, if he comes back from that meniscus and looks like the way that he did right before that meniscus injury and starts to get into that form we expected to see him for a starter, good luck getting less than 100.
Hey, guys, guess what? We're already like halfway through the minimum of his recovery time for this surgery. So let's not like panic too much and think you just got to dump the guy because he gets hurt a lot. Like 2 more weeks, he could be back for all we know.
Yeah, we've talked about it enough. We've talked about it enough. Now, it is something that is on our radar, though, and we did want to bring it up briefly. Any other chatter, rumblings, Mike Vigil tummy aches you want to talk about, or no? You good?
10-time tummy ache survivor right here, yeah.
Since we last podcast, Kevin, both of us had a lot to say on the second option front and just the frustration that we had as people who are covering the stuff on a day-to-day basis and talking about the same things over and over again and just how evident and clear some things are and yada, yada, yada. We got into it enough after the Philly loss. The Suns have gone 2-2. Chris Paul has not played. We ended last episode kind of saying, we'll see if he even plays against Minnesota. He said he's fine. Then again, that's Chris Paul saying he's fine. The way that I've been telling people asking me about it, I'll say it on the podcast, is usually the way that we can treat an injury report, Kevin, is once guys get listed as doubtful or questionable, from going out to being doubtful, doubtful to questionable, doubtful to, like, once a guy's probable, he's probably going to play. That's how the whole word kind of works there. But Chris Paul has been questionable for all 5 of these games. We're recording this about 2.5 hours before the Utah game. Typically, we don't record on a game day. We had to for reasons. We're good. He's been questionable for 5 games, Kevin, in a row. And this goes back to right shoulder contusion from the Lakers series. I just treat injury reports for him differently than everyone else, because it's not traditional by any means in the way that I'm saying, because questionable to me in the Minnesota game, I was like, oh, great. So like he'll probably be back in 2 or 3 games, like at the very most. And here we are. He's questionable for all 5 of these games and then gets ruled out the day of the game. They're 2-2 without him. Campaign is where we should start. He has been fantastic. He's averaging 21 points, 4 rebounds, 6 assists per game, shooting 44% from the field. Most importantly, assist to turnover ratio is a 3.4, which is really good. It is more than solid. And for someone like him, especially where that number was a huge issue off the bench last year, it was really good. This is stuff we got into before the year when I wrote the story and talked to him about being the X factor of the team and just the difference between his numbers as coming off the bench as opposed to a starter. He's been good off the bench. He's been great as a starter this year. But there are just inconsistencies, Kevin, that they are still kind of working through. I think that, let me know if you agree with this, and then I'll kind of let you take us where you want to with these 4 games. But I think the one takeaway that I have for this Suns season, 14 games into the year, is that they still have the 5th gear, the 6th gear, the overdrive, the Nas button that Vin Diesel is hitting, whatever you want to call it, to play that type of basketball where no one is going to beat them. We saw that in the Warriors game, both Warriors games, I should say. And we've seen it to some effects across a couple of these games. For the Miami loss, they had it for about a quarter and a half, and then they just couldn't finish the game. But that's super duper high end basketball on both ends. The road trip to Mentors is what I called them, because that level of ruthlessness that they reach, we've seen it at home too, obviously, but it just comes up a lot on road trips, and more specifically at the end of them. That team is still there, and it's important that they still have that super high end gear. But the consistency with that gear, I don't know about that. And then just their overall consistency beyond the highs, it's been mixed so far. I'm not saying if it's been good or bad, but just been mixed. Where do you want to go with the four games?
I mean, just to stick to the campaign point, I think for me, you would hope that Monty Williams takes like some confidence building, or like confidence in his own brain about campaign out of this, because I think even when Chris Paul is not questionable anymore and comes back, you got to look at leaning more on campaign, letting him have heavier minutes. Cause I think he's a player who last year it was, I'd have to go look at the minutes and how he would play when he was not producing very much, but it felt like he would just get pulled. And then they never really found that rhythm where you got this different pace of a campaign led team versus Chris Paul. And so they're really working the pace right now. And I think when you combo that with whatever Chris Paul brings, which is traditionally slower and more, you know, pointed of attacks, and he's getting the offense going in the half court, you get this really shocking thing for opponents to deal with. And I think when they went on the finals run, that was like the big thing, right? They survived against the Clippers in the Western Conference Finals because they turned to this thing that they had all year, and they just did it all the time, which was they shocked the Clippers into like, oh, this is not the same feel of a team. And I think that dynamic was really important when you look at how deep you can go and how deep your bench is, even just because, again, of the pace. And I just wonder if, like, even if campaign has off nights, if they just like really say, okay, we're going to commit to this and give you 25 minutes a night, whether you're on or off, that's going to be huge. Not only for Chris Paul's rest, for just like creating this dynamic on this team. So I think that's the important part for me. And look, Book's doing a lot of the initiating too out of this stuff, but it's still the same kind of feel where it's not the Chris Paul feel. And I'm not saying yes or no, phase him out. I'm saying you should probably have both of those things available to you if you're going to actually be like a Western Conference Finals team even.
Yeah, and the record isn't super duper shiny. Like the 12-3 Celtics or the 11-3 Bucks, they're 9-5 right now, or which is fine, but they're third in offense and they're third in defense right now in terms of that overall, and they're second in net rating. So those types of numbers just lend you to believe that they're playing really, really good basketball right now, which they are, but we're just comparing it to last year and more specifically grading them on the opposite of a curve and just looking at them with the second option stuff. And I think an interesting wrinkle in here, to quickly go on the Booker part first, I wrote this in the Warriors recap, Kevin, and I was messaging you that we should talk about this on the podcast, and we don't have to go in depth on it too much because we talked about it enough in the last couple of episodes. But when they were beating the Warriors, and it was kind of like through three quarters, it was clear that the Warriors just didn't have the juice that night. Steve Kerr emptied his bench, essentially started the fourth quarter with five bench guys on the floor at the same time. The Suns had Devin Booker still in, so he played the whole third quarter and then was in there for about three more minutes. And then by the time he was off the floor, I think there were four starters back on the floor before one Warriors starter came back in. I think Mikal went north of 40 again in that game, I want to say. Book was in the high 30s. Curry was the only guy over 35. He was at 36. But even that, Wiggins was the only other guy over 30 for the Warriors. And it was just this really stark reminder of how differently a team like Golden State approaches the regular season right now. They're in a completely different situation, to be fair. They're going through a lot of stuff, and Kerr sending messages, and he said a lot of really he said some stuff after the game, Kevin. He was pretty harsh on his team, which they deserve, to be fair, with how they're playing. But the Suns just are going to be there. And when Chris Paul's out, it's just going to be a lot of point book. And again, I'm guessing they just have the numbers for this to be okay. Because if the numbers didn't say it was okay, I don't think they would be doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm looking at, so their defense has actually fallen off. They're in the last 10 games, they're 11th in the NBA. And last four games, Mikal, I think, has gone over 40 minutes three times. And I don't know, man. It's just, I know like playing Steph probably bumps some of these like small sample size numbers up. But at some point, you've got to trust your bench and you've got to say, okay, Josh Okogie, go play 10 minutes, 12 minutes. Fine, use all your fouls and take some minutes away from Mikal. And Monty has turned to him like sparingly. Turned to Damian Lee more. I don't know. It's just lots of this doesn't seem sustainable or good. And like our last podcast, it's a wonder of Booker and Bridges just have a lot on them. And you've got to find ways to take it off. And again, even with campaign playing well and playing more minutes with Chris Paul out, it's a wonder how you do that. Do you do more Dwayne Washington Jr., who I think and put him at the two sometimes if he's not at the backup point. And I know Landry Shamet being out with a concussion like has something to do with that, but you just got to look at Shamet, Dwayne Washington, and Okogie and find minutes, I guess, for them.
Four games, Paul's been out. Bridges, 40.6 minutes per game. Booker at 37.7. And I will emphasize here something that I think Bridges against Portland will randomly play low to mid-30s minutes occasionally. And Monty will get asked about it, and he's like, well, 35 minutes guarding Damian Lillard is like 55 minutes of NBA basketball, basically, with like the stress it puts on you. And I'm going to make that point again here in a different way, where 40.6 minutes for Mikal Bridges is a lot more different than the 40.6 minutes almost anyone else in the entire NBA plays. And then a Booker is at 37.7 running the offense, essentially. Now, campaign is averaging those 21 points per game, and he's on the ball a bit. But if there's one guy, if you had to pick one guy who's been the point guard over this four games, it's been Booker, and it hasn't been Payne. I agree with you. Damian Lee being at 21.5 minutes just isn't enough. He needs to be north of 25. He needs to be playing a couple more in place of Bridges and maybe even a couple more in place of Booker. He's been really good this year, and I often tread lightly when I suggest that for role players just because they're really good in their little pockets of play. And if you extend it too much, then you start to see some of the limitations in their play show. But Lee's shooting something like 45% from three this year, I want to say. And just when he's out there, he makes really good plays. And there's no reason for him to be at 21.5 minutes right now when you're missing Chris Paul and Landry Shamet. That just doesn't make much sense to me. Torrey Craig's at 31 a game as well. And then Payne's at 33. Dwayne Washington at 13.3. I think that could go up a bit. I think he could be north of 15. I think there are guys playing well right now. It's not like their bench has been a disaster during this four games. They've been playing well. So again, in the we're going to put the bookmark there just in terms of a keep an eye on this. We'll reopen the book. Is that how the metaphor goes, Kevin? I'm asking you for my own metaphor. And if I'm doing well,
the bookmark goes in the book. Yeah.
I'm trying my hardest here. They have ways, effective ways to cut these down a bit. And again, if they go 44-38, it's not the end of the world if it's because of this, if it's because of doing things like this. And we'll notice if it's things like that. But right now it's not. And they're playing really, really good basketball for a lot of different reasons. And one of them is because of these elevated minutes for these two guys. But during that Orlando game specifically, I was on the playback stream with the timeline guys, and our pal Durag Hoops on Twitter, who's a great follow, who points out a lot of smart things during Suns basketball games, was on the mic, and Mikal just took another fall, and he was just kind of saying like, man, like he just like I'm scared for that day when he finally has to miss a game, or finally like one of those falls actually keeps him down on the ground for more than 5 seconds or whatever, because the punishment that guy takes and that Booker takes on that load, it's just That's why we have to keep bringing it up, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I think Monty's stubbornness, which I think we can agree is like really good sometimes and helps guys get out of funks and all that. We'll see if that ever bites him in this.
I guess. Yeah. We'll see. I guess that's the right way to phrase it, but that's also dangerous if he gets hurt and we're like, well, that's why you don't play 40. It's those discussions are always difficult. Do you want to talk about DA?
I don't know if I have the energy on this Friday.
I don't think we have things to say on it. I'll just say
I don't know. It's the same as always. I thought he actually showed assertiveness in the Golden State game.
Okay. Over the last six games, he hasn't played well. Start of the second half in the Golden State game, they pretty much run the offense around him, and not in the Chris Paul way of running ball screens. They just gave him the ball on the block like we've been talking about. And he did not do well with it at all. He was very tentative with creating a space, and that's the thing that that's fine when the shots aren't falling, but when the shots are falling, I should say, because the touch shots, the follow-away jumpers, all that stuff, when you have 4 inches on a guy or 9 inches on a guy when Steph Curry's guarding you, it's okay if the shot goes in, but the shot wasn't going in. That's where he needs to adjust to get more physical, and it just wasn't there in that game, and the crowd started groaning. And it's just definitely one of those things where there's an energy kind of in the building now when he goes through one of those stretches that just wasn't there 2 years ago that I personally find noteworthy to bring up. But like you say, we do have these types of conversations 4 times a year. He has these types of stretches 3 or 4 or 5 times a year. It's just a lot more imperative for him to figure it out over stretches like this when guys are out, when they're relying on him so much, when we're talking about Mikal or DeAndre being the guy. And he'll bounce back here in one of these games and then get back to the stretch that we're used to seeing from him more consistently, because it's, I don't know what, 80-20 in terms of just the 80 being really, really good top 5 center in the league, and then the 20 being, and that's probably too high. It's probably more like 90-10, but it's just, we're 14 games into the year and almost half of those 14 games have not been great from him. The rebounding numbers are down, but I don't know. That's all I think. You got anything? No energy? It's okay. You can tap out.
It's partially just like, are you surprised when this stuff happens anymore? Like, I get it's frustrating and people, it's weird because like on Twitter, again, where Twitter poisons my brain, people cite the money and it's like, well, would you want to just let him walk because you want to pay him $20 million less over the course of, like, that's not how it works. You got an offer and you want your team to be as good as possible, so you match the offer. So to me and my brain, I'm just like, it's pretty simple, man. I don't think about quibbling about his money and like that's supposed to change him that much. Like I feel like I know who he is and he's still got that money, you know?
Yeah. So like I was saying, Kevin, that conversation with him specifically files under the same section we put the Bridges Booker stuff under, where it's more of just something to observe, something to monitor going forward. Not everything has to be a super duper concern, a super duper positive, a super duper negative. If DA keeps playing like this for the next 3 weeks, that's where we really do start to talk about, oh man, did he get the bag? And now this is what we're going to see. That type of conversation that you were alluding to. We're 14 games in, it's been 6. And yes, there were some of those front half games. There were a few that weren't great from him either. But like you said, it is what it is with him to a certain extent. We're always going to just wrap around to that same conclusion with that specific discussion on him. You brought him up, Kev. We should bring him up. Dwayne Washington Jr., who fans became enamored with in the preseason because another dribble guy. We love a good dribble guy on this podcast, Kevin. Mm. He is certainly a dribble guy. Miami game was the shout-out Rodney Rogers, shout-out Leandro Barbosa, shout-out Gerald Green when he did come off the bench. He started a lot for those teams. But the flamethrower, game-changing, I think it was 18 points in 7 minutes in the Miami game. They lost that game, which is crazy considering they got that contribution from him and how they played in the second half. He got super hot from three. That's what he can do as a shooter, as a scorer. We've seen a little bit of the off the dribble stuff. he looks competent everywhere else. I think that the point that I made in the preview for the Utah game is that he's just a hooper. And what I mean by that is he just makes smart plays. He plays super hard. He knows where to be. And it just seems like his game sense and instincts are in a really good spot right now for, and I have to say this too, I mentioned it in there, Kevin, for guys like Jock Landale and Dwayne Washington Jr. to come into a team like this. Jock Landale is 27. So he's older than Dwayne Washington at 22. But for Jock Landale in his second NBA season to come into a well-oiled machine like this that is excellent offensively and excellent defensively, and then on the defensive end, as we covered a couple episodes ago, this is a team that pretty much has no below-average defenders. So you got to come in here and defend if you're going to play. And I think that was something that is so hard to picture Dwayne being able to do in his second NBA season, to come up and play average to above-average defense on a contender. But I've thought he's been good for what you can expect out of him on that end. It's a lot of learning for him to still do, certainly, but he's running stuff well. It seems like the point book fit is where they're at right now. They're playing the Grand Rapids backcourt, and I just think he's exactly what they need. And you know what's cool, Kev? These games are working out right now, and he's playing well. If you need to spice something up in March, you're in a funk. You've lost 3 of 4. The backcourt isn't playing well off the bench. You can put him in there. You can do the old Aaron Holiday deal. You can mix and match. You know, I think that's the option that he at least gives them, which is value, to say the least.
Well, you want to actually be able and willing to play them, unlike Aaron Holiday. But yeah, I just think the shooting element is, I guess I knew he was a good shooter, but just how it comes off his hands, how he just can get it off really quick, I think surprised me. And like, even more than Shamet, because Shamet has gone through these patches where he's like passing up shots. Like, he's like Cam Johnson as far as, oh, I'm open, I'm going to shoot it now, okay, bye.
The deflection from Okoji in the Golden State game, it landed in his hands with the defender in front of him, and he just like, okay, I shoot. Yeah.
And every shot's in rhythm because of that, and it just looks good because he's a good shooter. But it's also just like, yeah, you can tell like he's going to, it's kind of like receivers, like really good receivers like DeAndre Hopkins, where it's like, oh, if you put the ball anywhere near him, it just kind of like gravity into his hands or something. And that's kind of what it's like with him, where, yeah, he might be coming off an awkward bounce or catching a bad pass, but he's going to be in rhythm when he's ready to go up with it and ready to shoot all the time. And I just think that's super important and screws up defenses and makes them afraid and freaked out anytime that dude's on the floor. So from just that aspect, it's been good. But then you look at plays like, I think it was the Warriors game where, I don't remember if it was a long rebound or something, but he pushed it and kicked it right ahead to Landale, who was running the court. And maybe it was just the TV angle where it didn't look like the easiest pass or there was traffic in there, but like just the awareness, having your heads up.
He did two things. He slowed up to free Landale, because he could have just run the ball up the court, clogged the middle, and Landale wouldn't have had a lane to run through. So he slowed up, and then, yeah, the pass is harder than it looks. Yeah.
Yeah. And just little stuff like that, where we talked about him not being a point guard, and that's more operationally getting guys into sets and stuff. But from a pure like vision and knowing how to find those angles, I think he's in a really good spot. And when you combine that give it a shooter with a guy who's an underrated passer, like there's no reason not to play him at both guard spots. And I think that's the biggest thing as this year goes on, is like, he should be that guy if Cam Payne or Landry gets hurt, or if one of them is in a big funk, like, yeah, throw him in there.
Throw him in there for sure, man. And they had a little, DA was playing extended minutes. Like, he was out there a little longer than he normally is in the third quarter when the reserve started rolling in. But they rolled out a Washington, Booker, Lee, Bridges, Ayton lineup. And I was like, ooh, I really like this, because you've got Booker first option on the ball. You've got Ayton with all the gravity that he brings in. And then you've got three really, really good shooters. Lee has been fantastic this year. We know Mikel's a really good shooter, and obviously Washington is a really good shooter as well. But then there's some dribble equity there too, where if Washington, Lee, or Bridges are attacking off the second side, they're in a good spot. But all three of those guys can do a little. Lee can run a two dribble pick and roll. Now, he can't run an offense by any means consistently, but if there's 12 seconds on the shot clock, he calls over a ball screen. Like, he can make the dump off pass. He can make the lob. He can make one of the passes out of it. We know Mikel can do that. Obviously, Washington has shown in the brief time that he can do that. And that's just one of those situations where when you play a guy like this offensively with his types of skills, which is where we go back to the summer and talking about Bojan Bogdanovic and just like the amount of offensive, I want to say freedom, but just there's just a certain freeness that opens up to a lineup when you add a player like him in there who can shoot the way that he can and can do a little bit of scoring off the dribble. It's just so clearly what this team is missing. And even getting it from a two-way guard is something that can really help them. And in that kind of lineup specifically, I hope they play it again in Utah tonight. And I hope we get to see, I would like to see at least more of Washington, Lee, and then one of those three other guys, which I think we will. But yeah, I just think it's been great. And what you hope, Kevin, with the Aaron Holiday thing, it was good that you brought that up, is that he does earn enough trust from the coaching staff, because not to say two games is enough, but everything's looked really good in these two games, Kevin, to at least give him a try at certain points later in the year when injuries aren't as much of an issue for this team anymore. But yeah, and I can't say this enough. He seems like a great kid who just works his tail off. We say that about everyone that they bring in because they just find their types of guys. But he's right in like that ish mold where it just seems like he's a great dude to be around, and everyone enjoys him and everyone's rooting for him. So that's been great to see. That's been great to see. Do you think Jay Crowder is going to be a member of the Phoenix Suns the next time we do this?
Yeah, I do.
Me too. we're not doing the joke and the meme as much anymore, but I do think so. Yeah. Now, when we podcast on December 13th, like 3 days before that date passes, where I think Gambo's been saying a third of the league can get traded because so many guys can't get traded when they were signed or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
That'll be the time where we have to think about it before saying no again or saying yes to him being on the Suns still.
So we're generally in the camp of Jay Crowder will outlast Twitter. Is that where we're at?
Okay. Does Jay Crowder play for a new team first, or does Cam Johnson return for the Suns first?
Cam Johnson returns.
I think so too. Yeah. I think that's a better way of doing it. It was funny to see Jay post the, he posted a bit, like he quote tweeted a workout video that one of his trainers put up or something, and then he put like something just work, and it's like, well, you aren't going to work right now technically. I understand what you're saying, you're getting working and that's great.
Georgia Tech,
there are guys in his situation where they just wouldn't be working their tail off to be in peak physical condition as much as they can, so the second they get traded they're going to be ready for 25-30 playoff caliber kind of minutes, like he's going to be with how hard he's working. But he's not working at his job right now. technically he is, but technically he isn't too. All right, we'll be back next week. This is a really fun slate of games in terms of just seeing different teams. Yes, the Los Angeles Lakers are on it. I know, I see that. But the Knicks with Jalen Brunson is the Sunday afternoon game, the Utah game. You guys have probably seen that game by the time you're listening. And then we'll probably podcast before the Detroit game. Jaden Ivey, all my stock, Kevin. It's been a mixed bag so far, but I'm 0% concerned. Jalen Duren, they knew what they were doing there, Kev? He's kind of good.
How's your Azulis Tabella stock?
Oh, it's great. Oh, yeah. Dude, the best 17-year-old basketball player in the world, Kalen Boswell. Or no, it's probably Victor Wembanyama. Is he still 17? He's one of the best 17-year-old basketball players on the planet. I'm saying it out loud. He looks awesome. Okay. Cats talk TBD. We'll see how this Maui goes, and then maybe we're back after Maui.
Yeah.
That's what we said last year, and I think that's a good idea. We can't do it every, but if they start to look good, we'll feed what everyone wants. I know everyone listening wants to hear us talk about it, but we're just gonna
skip to the end. Yeah.
We gotta create some more demand until then. All right, everyone. We'll see you next week.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.